Hey guys, real quick before we begin here, it's important to note that nothing that we say here is financial or investment advice. We're not financial or investment advisors, and all the content that we make here is strictly educational in nature. Also, it's important to note that a lot of the cryptos that we talk about, we have exposure to, not all of them, but some of them, and we just want to be completely transparent in nature with everything that we do over here. Also, all the opinions that we have are just our own. They're not reflective of any company in particular. And the crypto markets are extremely volatile and risky, which is a big reason that a lot of us love them. But again, it's important to just kind of let that be known right from the get-go. Also, you should never invest or trade more than you can afford to lose. And we want to make sure that everyone is aware that there's a lot of scammers floating around out there. They're trying to impersonate me and TiVo and Bryce and so many other public figures. So do not fall for them. We're never going to reach out to you. We're not going to be DMing you. We're not going to be asking you to send us money. So just be on edge out there in case there's any kind of impersonators trying to impersonate us. And now that's out of the way, enjoy the episode. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the charts. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. Now, not only do we have a big old squeeze happening on the charts today, but we're joined by a very special guest. In fact, some of you might just know who he is, Mr. Bryce Paul. Bryce, how are we feeling and yeah, welcome?
You guys have been holding it down. Love what you guys have done with the place. You know, the show's been awesome. I've been loving following along. You guys have been rock solid. It's really incredible to see what's going on in the crypto market right now. And, you know, we're recording this, morning of Wednesday, May 15th. A lot of big things hitting the tape that's affecting prices. So, yeah, a lot to talk about. But, yeah, I'm excited to kind of hop back on here with you guys and chop it up because there's a lot to talk about. And I think this correction's coming to a close here. It's been 2 months long, and I think that we're rounding the corner here and that things are going to be looking good. So, yeah, excited to chop it up with you guys.
I mean, there's seriously so much to talk about in today's episode, and we have it all ready for you. I mean, we got tweets, we got social media posts, we got influencers, we got charts, news, you name it, we're going to be talking about it. But before we get into the meat and potatoes, of course, we're joined by super producer TiVo as well. So TiVo, love to have your social media expertise in the house.
Absolutely. And you couldn't ask for a better episode. We've got markets ripping. We've got the return of Roaring Kitty. Meme stocks are flying. So we're doing crypto. We're doing meme stocks. This is probably, we haven't even started. We just started recording. This is probably going to be the best episode in a long time. This is why you listen week to week. Crypto alpha, just alpha all over the place. Let's dive in.
Alpha's oozing out of every orifice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling the life come back this morning. We were kind of going to a close yesterday, right? Tuesday, and me and Bryce and one of the other analysts, Matt, we were talking and we were just like, man, you know, we are really squeezing down into a crucial support level. And we talked about it on the Crypto Rundown before. But when we throw up the charts in just a second here, we can see that we woke up to a very pleasant surprise with Bitcoin rising all the way back up from around $61,000 right back to our main point of resistance. You know it. We've talked about it. The 50-day moving average, the big old immediate resistance level for not only Bitcoin, but a lot of mainstream altcoins too. I mean, you look at the Bitcoin, the Ethereum, the Total 2, even the Solana chart, the list goes on. This thing has been the menace holding a lot of cryptocurrency down, acting as the immediate resistance zone. And man, we ripped all the way back up to this thing today. So quick reminder, before we throw the screen shares and everything up, if you want to follow along with all the different visuals that we're going to be showing and sharing today, you got to go over to the YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 podcast on YouTube. You can check us out there. If you are an Apple podcast or a Spotify, an Audible listener, that's where you're going to be able to see all the visuals. So without further ado, let's throw up the charts. Let's take a look at everything that's happening here, and we can get this ball rolling.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
So this is what we are dealing with. Again, about a 5.5% move on the day over here for Bitcoin. And this is that rally that we were talking about from right below the 20-day moving average all the way up to this pink and red line that we have, which is the 50-day moving average. Now, this used to be an area of support. We saw Bitcoin bouncing off this for a while, but ever since we broke down, we've been talking about this. It feels like every week, almost on the week, TiVo. It feels like every week we come back and we're like, oh, we're back at the 50-day moving average. Here we are again. Let's run it back. But it's true. I mean, we seriously are just coming up to this area, and we've seen Bitcoin reject this once, now twice, now three times, and now we're coming back up for a fourth time. But I'll tell you what's different this time around. And that's that not only do we have this falling level of resistance that we've had on Bitcoin for a little while now, and we've gotten this through its just consistent lower highs. However, with Bitcoin kind of coming at a higher low here above its previous low, this kind of breaks the trend of lower lows. And so now what this does is this puts us at not only having lower highs, but also now higher lows. And so for the past maybe almost 2 months now, Bitcoin has been bouncing off of $60,000 as the primary support. Again, we've just continually all the way through, with the exception of just over a week ago. And this is where Bitcoin fell through. It had a lot of people scared. A lot of technical analysts were looking at this and saying, hey, we could definitely move further down. But the bulls came in and they just bought this thing up in mass. We saw the ETF outflows diminish. We saw the bulls come in, they had a lot of strength, they sent this thing right back up to resistance. And that's exactly what you want to see from a dangerous zone. You want to see the bulls come in and say, not today. And so now, as we're kind of seeing these higher lows and lower highs, this creates the popular term that we like to use called a squeeze. Now, if you're not sure what a squeeze is, this is where you get pressure essentially building from both the bulls and the bears, resistance and support. It's converging on one another. And think about if you had a balloon in your hand, right? You're squeezing it harder and harder and harder, and pressure is building towards one end, and eventually it pops. It makes the loud noise, you know, air rushes outwards. If it's a water balloon, water goes everywhere. Well, the same goes for the markets, right? We have pressure building, and now we're looking at this and saying, okay, well, are we going to pop and explode to the upside, or are we going to pop and explode to the downside? Because if we break the 50-day moving average here, this breaks the short-term downtrend, and this enables Bitcoin to arguably go back into the 70,000s, the low 70,000s, start retesting the really the last and primary resistance line around all-time highs. And this is what we want to see from the bulls. We want to see them get rid of the immediate bearish argument that is causing Bitcoin to squeeze into this big old support. Because if this continues, well, we're really starting to wear support thin here, and the bulls need to come in and defend this thing, because if not, we could maybe get a descending triangle, something like this, that's essentially just pushing prices down lower. And then we have the whole argument or the whole conversation of Bitcoin going back to the low 50s, high 40s, around the 200-day moving average all over again. And so that's what I'm looking at on the charts right here. You know, these are the areas that I'm watching out for. I'm watching out for the 60K support line. I'm also watching the falling level of resistance that is the 50-day moving average. I think this is where the squeeze is right in between now. And I truly do believe we're going to get our answer within the next week or so. I mean, heck, we might even get it today, depending on how Bitcoin keeps going over here. And so that's everything that's happening on the Bitcoin chart. And we've also seen Bitcoin dominance back on the rise. Now, this is one of those things that we like to talk about over here, because everyone's always asking, hey, when are we going to get an altcoin season? When are altcoins going to be the move? When should we be investing in these things versus, you know, the large caps like Bitcoin? Like, how do we know when one should be a priority over the other? And well, we look at things like Bitcoin dominance and the total two chart. And so Bitcoin dominance is back on a tear here. I mean, we saw this thing bottom out right around 53, 54%. Now it's all the way back up to almost 56%. And so all that this means is that Bitcoin is outperforming the vast majority of altcoins, and dominance is back on the rise, which is always, 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 always something that we see going into a market cycle. Bitcoin dominance goes up, altcoin season happens, Bitcoin dominance gets wrecked, and altcoins go on these crazy runs. And so there's certainly some outliers. I'm sure we're going to talk about them in just a second here. But before we get deep into the altcoins, I want to open up the floor here, get everyone else's thoughts, because man, what a day we are having.
No, I love it, dude. Incredible TA. And I think you're right. I mean, what I'm seeing here is there's a vibe shift. I don't know if you guys could hear it or feel it, but there's definitely a vibe shift. I think that people have been super doom and gloom for the past, 2 months on this, kind of the back of these, altcoins, cratering, Bitcoin cratering, 25%. Some altcoins are down, as much as 60%. So I think there was a lot of doom and gloom. There was a lot of, kind of FUD around these inflation prints that were all coming in pretty hot as well. But I think like we've reached, or we've actually surpassed that sort of peak pessimism for like this part of the correction. I think that this is like a pretty normal, correction. It's lasted about 2 months, which is pretty standard for a bull market correction. Somewhere between, 45 days and 75 days, call it, is a pretty, typical correction of, 25 to 35%. So this kind of checks all the boxes for me. We had the pessimism on the timeline. We had like the magnitude and the sort of duration of the correction sort of match. And then if I could throw up my chart as well, just to kind of show you what I'm looking at, just because, there's a million different ways to look at the same chart, right? And so let me know if you can see my screen here.
Yep.
Cool. So basically, like, if we kind of take a look, I'm also looking here at like the, there's a couple things. So first off, this dip that we had back in January, it was only, it was about 12.5% away from the 200-day moving average. This also, this current dip resolved and started to reverse. As Brendan, you talked about the trend structure break. That's really key, right? That trend structure break, this also bottomed about, pretty much the same exact 12.5% from the 200-day moving average. So I think that's pretty key. The buyers that stepped in during this dip, from the, and you could also see as illustrated by this blue line, this anchored volume weighted average price, buyers stepped in and supported this this dip all along the way. Here, pretty much here again. Here, we're reclaiming this level as support. So we've got a new trajectory here of sort of this bull market. This now this line right here, this dotted white line is now kind of the primary trajectory of this support. The 200-day average kind of came in, and we also have on the money flow index, we've got very clearly a decline in volume based momentum. Here's the volume as well. We've had a decline of volume during this contraction, on balance volume oscillator as well, showing decline throughout. So that's kind of what you want to see, just a standard correction. But you do have, on these oscillators, very clearly a sign that, they've stopped moving lower and they've actually started to move higher. There's a trend break as well here. You could see on the money flow index very clearly starting to tip back up. In a pretty strong manner. So that's some confirmation. The confirmation isn't 100%. And let me just, we'll get rid of all this. We'll just go to a fresh chart here to get rid of some of this stuff. And you can see that, we are finding support. So I like this. I like prices coming back to the highs here relatively in short order. And there's a lot of coins we could talk about, but like, if we could, want to talk about like kind of what's driving this price action. What do you guys think? TiVo, what are you seeing on the news kind of that you think would accompany this kind of price action? I'm seeing a lot of stuff like regulatory and, positive discussions, but is there anything kind of ticking back up?
Yeah. Well, this is on our rundown a little later, but one thing last week I thought was, I think it happened Wednesday or Thursday. It was Trump came out and took the opposite stance of Biden. So again, we don't really talk too much politics, but it's just, it seems like there's one side of the political coin that's kind of anti-Bitcoin, anti-crypto, the SEC. As we all know, Brendan enjoyed my rant last week on Pigeon Gary, as I called him. A couple good memes with that. But I thought it was interesting to see, you know, the other political party kind of take a different stance. And then going into this week, we had the CPI, PPI. So your inflation data is starting to get, you know, quote unquote, cooler, which means, you know, the bet's going to be right now. I think after today's data, it was the market is betting on two cuts, September and December. So that was one. And then meme mania. So I think we'll get to that later in the show as a segment, a full segment. But meme mania with Roaring Kitty, GME, GameStop, AMC. Mm-hmm. You know, these companies that if you look at a traditional company and you're going to invest in as a stock, they're not making money. They're not profitable. But yet the stocks are going up, you know, 200% in 2 days.
Yeah, it's funny how it works, right? Someone comes in and it almost reminds me of when Elon would come in and would like post a picture of like a dog and then Dogecoin would just pump to the skies. It reminds me of that. But obviously this is for GameStop. And we'll get into those stories later because I think they're definitely worth talking about and certainly entertaining. But Tiva, one of the things that we were chatting about literally just yesterday is like, where are we at in this stage of the market, specifically for altcoins? Where are altcoins at right now in comparison to our previous cycle? So we're about a month after the halving. Where was the altcoin market about a month after the previous halving? And it got me thinking, and I was looking at the charts, doing some comparisons. And so I want to kind of throw this up there just to give us a little bit of a visual to compare with. And so when we're looking at this, again, this is where the halving was last time, May 11th, 2020. And so we go a month in advance, you know, to June 11th of 2020, right around here, right? Well, let's go over to the Total 2 chart, because a lot of people want to know what's happening with the altcoin space. And rightfully so. I mean, when we look at altcoins, altcoins have been pretty much what have been getting hammered here. Bitcoin isn't down all that much from its all-time high. It's held value relatively well. It's the mainstream altcoins here that have been getting hurt and that have been bleeding. And so people, again, are just curious about the altcoin market. So let's go all the way back to June 11th of 2020. And you see, that's going to put us right around here. So this little white dot that we have here. So a month after the previous halving, this is where the altcoin market was at. Now,
what's the market cap of that? It's about 100 billion, right?
Yeah, right around 100 billion. And fast forward to where the market peaked at. You know, I'm no rocket scientist.
About 10x higher, 14x higher.
Yeah, I mean, it did about a 14, 15x almost to the upside after this month period after the halving event. And so when we look at the
altcoin market, it did that in about a year, it looks like. That's crazy.
Yeah, oh, yeah, plenty of time.
Those were the days, man.
Plenty of time. And so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, you know, am I worried about the altcoin market? Not really, not yet. Again, historically, we always see the market cap of crypto and we see the tops happen typically about a year after the halving event. Sometimes a little bit more, sometimes right around that year mark. But this is where we are at in comparison to our previous cycle. So if this holds true, right, if we hold to this old model, which again, we don't have to, things can change. There's no guarantees in the market. But if we're using history as a guidance point over here, well, I still think the future of crypto looks bright, not only from a fundamental perspective, not only from all the technical stuff that we have going on, but also just looking back at history and whether it can repeat itself. You know, I think that there are green flags pointing in this direction as well. So, I mean, let's just look at some of these altcoins briefly before we dive into the news, because they're rebounding really well. We have NEAR up 11%. We have Stax up 10%. We have Axelar up, oops, and I'm just realized I'm not looking at the current chart, but we have Axelar up almost 19%. We have Aerodrome up 12%. We have Ondo up 10%, almost 11%. Goldfinch up 10%. Like, there's so many altcoins now that are up double digits. The graph's up 12%. The list goes on, right? I mean, we're just cycling through. It's hard to find a red cryptocurrency on this chart. And there might be a few here and there, but the vast majority of the cryptos are green, like 7, 8, 9, 10% on the day. And that's just a good thing to see. We like to see altcoins recovering over here. And so, yeah, a lot of positive sentiment as we're kind of going into this episode today, and it kind of continues, right? I mean, Let's look at the news.
Yeah. Can I actually interject? Because I loved your analysis on looking at the last halving. And I just wanted to see if that same index went back to the halving prior. And you're never going to believe it, but you know, that same index, the Total 2 Market Cap Index, July of 2016, July 9th, 2016 was the halving that came before the one that you just analyzed in May 11th, 2020. And you could see pretty much the day of the halving, the altcoin market cap went from $200 million and overnight it went pretty much, or not overnight, that in that week, it went up to $600 million. So it 3X'd in you know, the week or two after the halving. All right. And then it consolidated pretty much for 1 month, 2 months, three, four, five, you know, 6 month consolidation after that. And then went from a $600 million market cap all the way up to what ended up, you know, topping out at a $480 billion market cap by the end of that 2017 bull run. And so that was from kind of the halving, the point of the halving to the peak of the bull market cycle in 2017, altcoin market cap went up. Oh my God, what number is this? This is 228,558%. That's an incredible
measly
number. Do I think anything like that's going to happen again? You know, maybe not exactly, but if we just take a look at those two examples and we even take an average of it, or we take, you know, divide it by two each time, I mean, you're still going to get incredible returns. The market over time has diminishing volatility and diminishing returns, right? But I still don't think that we're at the point where like returns are going to be are going to be super, super small, yeah, like single digit percentage points for Bitcoin on an annualized basis. I mean, it's still a 60 vol asset annualized. So I still think we're going to see a lot of volatility there in the Bitcoin market. And that just is going to ripple over to the altcoins. Like, it's inescapable, right? I mean, we're going to see volatility.
Yeah, there definitely are. And this kind of like raises a decent question. Like, what do we think is going to happen with the altcoins that are down 50% versus the ones that are these stronger performing altcoins? Because we look at some of those charts that are holding better, things like Ondo, things like Solana, things like Near Protocol, Render, Akash. Those are all ones that have actually been stronger performing altcoins. They've held value better. But then we also have most mainstream altcoins, which are down maybe 30, 40, 50, heck, 60% in some cases. And so what do we think is going to happen here? Because we looked at the previous cycle. We looked at the cycle before that. And yeah, we have these choppy periods. It's nothing new to the crypto market. I mean, heck, we can retrace 50% on an altcoin inside of a bull market, and it's just another Wednesday, right? And so we're looking at this. So there's a lot of people who hold altcoins out there. And I guess how are we all looking at the market? I want to get everyone's perspective here. You know, are we looking at the altcoins that are down 50%? Or are we looking at the altcoins that are the stronger performers? Yeah. Because I think that there are two sides to the spectrum. And I'll kind of go first here. But I am still eyeing up those ones that are holding value the most. And I'll tell you what, I know it's easy to look at the ones that retraced 50, 60% and go, oh, well, they're at the biggest argue buy, right? They're at the biggest area of value because they're down the most. But it's also like, well, they've also been underperforming. And so I certainly think that there are cryptos that are in that, that are in that situation that are going to be amazing dip buys. And some of those are going to go back to all-time highs and stuff. However, you know, we're in a new cycle. And with every new cycle, new coins arise, and the top 100 coins by market cap shifts vastly every single cycle. And in fact, I challenge anyone to go back and look at the 2017, 2018 cycle and the top 100 coins in there, and you'll be shocked. You'll be like, I didn't even know half these coins existed. And yeah, I mean, when we're looking at the current state of crypto here, you know, I think that there are two ways to look at it. But, you know, for me personally, I'm looking at these coins that are leading the market, even in times of bad. And so when they do see their pullbacks, those are the ones that I'm kind of eyeing up over here. So,
yeah.
Anyway, areas of opportunity.
I'm with you entirely. I think that in bull markets, you know, especially crypto, they're so momentum driven, and, you know, momentum's, you know, pretty objective. You know, you look at, you know, past performance over the course of the past, you know, 30 days or 60 days. You know, you've got a lot of indicators that could kind of measure momentum. But also just like, you know, buying the coins that are above their 200
day average, coins that are above their 50-day, their 20-day, right? Once all those are kind of moving in the right direction, I mean, the two that stick out to me right now, and full disclosure, I've got exposure, are NEAR and Render. And we've talked about them kind of in some of our private calls for subscribers. But during this whole corrective period, those were two of the coins that were in the top 100 that are legit and that actually held above their 20-day and their 50-day moving average. So that just indicated that they've got strength, like they've got the marginal buy. And I'm actually pretty excited about, you know, what they're doing fundamentally. And so, but to your point, like there are also some coins that I'm really excited about that did dip pretty hard and that did sit down on their 200-day moving average for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, you want to see, you know, basically want to buy the coins that have the strength after the dip. And so I think it's going to be a really, you know, telling period over the course of the next week or two. You want to see which coins really get bought up hard off their 200-day moving average and kind of go with that trend. Because it's like kind of the big money buyers saying, okay, these coins are at good value. We're going to add to our long-term positions. And so I think there's going to be, you know, a big tell in the market. Because remember, we still haven't seen a lot of volume confirmation yet on this move. I think we will. I think there's going to be big volume that comes in on the breakout from this kind of market-wide correction. But there's still volume out there. And so once that occurs, it's kind of going to be a big signal to, you know, enter all crypto markets. And you just typically want to be long the strongest and be short the weakest. Although we don't, you know, we don't short the crypto market, you know, or I don't. You know, I think that there's lots of opportunities, too many opportunities on the long side. But anyhow, yeah, Tivo, what are you thinking, man? Are you a value buyer? Are you a momentum trader?
Well, I'm more of a set it and forget it type of guy. So, you know, I'm not in the weeds trading every day and teaching the trades and like yourselves. That's why I like to sit back and listen. But I will know, and this is from, you know, testament to our programs and what we do, is once we get that momentum and you can feel it and you see it in the markets, what I always have is a little bit, you know, you always want to have some dry powder, right, to check out a new project or something. What I found really valuable was, you know, what you and Brendan and Matt are doing with, you know, our reports or just our weekly newsletter. My biggest winners came, you know, I had the, you know, your top 100 coins that did really well. But some of my biggest winners was like coming off of the newsletter when we pinpoint Celestia, when we pinpoint Aerodrome, you know, so when the market had the momentum and then these kind of new projects were coming online or they just were getting released to Coinbase. If you can time the momentum with maybe a new project that people seem to be pretty bullish about, I think that's a pretty fun kind of combination to try and target and put some chips on the table for.
Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah. So if we get the momentum back, I'm going to be reading our newsletter looking for that next big play that people are excited for.
Amen, man. No, I like the idea also, you know, briefly, like this idea of a barbell approach where you kind of take stable, more liquid, more stable, less volatile assets on one side, and then sort of the high risk assets on the other side. And so you kind of balance your portfolio with, you know, value and momentum.
Yeah.
And you know, you want to make sure it's like a 60-40 stock bond portfolio. I mean, your stocks are kind of your juice. It's the excitement. It's the potential upside. It's the volatility in your bonds. Typically, historically, right, is that fixed income, that stable part of your portfolio. And so, you know, I always think about the crypto portfolio breakdown as you know, kind of similar to that. You want to have elements of both for a long-term sort of portfolio. But, you know, one of the things that I think is really driving the markets right now, speaking of portfolio allocations, are these freaking pension funds, man. Did you guys see, I think the state of Wisconsin announcing they put something like $100 million into Bitcoin. What was it?
Yeah. In the BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF. And then I believe there was another $64 million worth of Grayscale's GBTC.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there it is.
ETF. And yeah, wild. First of all, this makes them the first state, I believe, to do something like this. And I mean, hopefully the first of many. And what this means is essentially not only do we have like financial institutions and all these other things across the world looking at Bitcoin and saying, it's probably good to own and service this stuff. Well, I mean, now we have governments and even states within the United States saying, hey, we should probably hold some of this too. And I just think the world is waking up to the realization of what Bitcoin is going to be. And again, we go back to the charts. We see Bitcoin fluctuate 10, 15, 20%. And we're like, oh my goodness, like everything's happening. This is so bearish. But the really big players, they're not worried about this stuff.
Like, you don't want to be on the opposite side of when state congressmen are starting to say, should the state start to investigate allocating a small percentage of its reserves into a Bitcoin ETF? Basically saying, like, you know, this is literally like a congressman saying, we could have made, you know, $500 million if we bought Bitcoin. And, you know, his constituents are probably starting to like tell him, like, hey, you got to pay attention to this. I like this. 25% of pension managers present at a recent panel personally owned digital assets. If 1% of state pension AUM, which is $5.5 trillion, flowed into Bitcoin, it would dwarf mining revenue. It would lead to a supply shortage relative to demand. It would lead to a price increase in Bitcoin. I mean, this is like a congressman that's saying this. He's talking about Kathy Wood's $3.8 million Bitcoin target by 2030 if institutional investors allocate 5% of their portfolios to Bitcoin. I mean, if he's basically saying like the state of New Hampshire has outstanding liabilities to the state pension system of $1.25 billion and for bonds of around $200 million. How do we climb out of that hole? The answer might be staring us in the face. It's worthy of further investigation. They're talking about the, you know, holding Bitcoin and having that sort of appreciate. I think it's incredible just to see this sort of discourse start to happen. And it's not only, you know, like you said, you know, the pension funds. There's also, you know, Nick Carter, you know, tweeted out this video from Paul Ryan. And, you know, I won't play it, or maybe I will. I don't know. Maybe we could edit it in because it's actually worth listening to. But basically talking about how stablecoin legislation, it should be a top priority because it could help the U.S. dollar. It could help, you know, the debt situation and all that kind of stuff. So definitely worth checking out. But there's just discourse now. And kind of like you said, you know, even Trump came out and said that he supports crypto. And so you now no longer have this one-sided narrative of crypto's bad, crypto's evil, you know, from all the politicians, Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, like whoever these people. Oh, let me show you one more here. Just as we're on the topic of politics stuff, one of the congresswomen or senators, let's see. Senate in Arizona, Carrie Lake. Crypto is one of the Arizona's fastest growing economic sectors. As cryptocurrency investing becomes more mainstream and faces increasing regulatory pressure, it's essential that people you elect stand up for this critical, rapidly expanding industry. That's a state senator that's saying these things. And you know, it's important that people, you know, finally start to wake up and pay attention here. I guess she's a nominee, actually. Hold on. Let me make sure people don't troll me for saying she's a nominee to be a senator.
No, great clarification. It's just crazy to think that in our current state, like, crypto has become such a talking point in a U.S. election cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were back in the 2016 election thinking about this, where it's like actually a highly debated topic between different parties, it's crazy. It's, you know, it's crazy. And so now here we are, and it just goes to show that this is becoming so mainstream. Like, all the politicians are talking about it. Most of them, honestly, it looks like a lot of them are pretty pro, obviously, depending on what side of the spectrum they're on here. But man, good stuff is happening. And just even this kind of notoriety, you know, people who aren't even in crypto, they're reading this stuff. They're looking at this stuff saying, hey, why is the politician that I love and I follow, or maybe the one that I hate, you know, why are they talking about this? Is this worth further investigation? And I think it is. So, you know, maybe you have a friend, maybe they work in politics, maybe you have a friend who doesn't know anything about crypto, you know, send them this stuff. Let them know that it's not just three guys on the internet here talking to you about crypto. No, it's literally the largest asset managers on the planet, the BlackRock, the Fidelity, the, you know, Invesco, but also the states and the governments and the officials and everyone. Like, these are the people who are leading the financial and the governmental world, and they're all talking about this. So, you know, it's not just us on a podcast saying, hey, you know, you need to hear about this thing that you might not have ever looked into before, but man, It's totally coming.
And just to further that point briefly, you know, Matt Hogan, CIO of Bitwise, is tracking these 13F filings, which is a filing that's mandated by the SEC to come out at least 45 days after the end of the quarter. So today is the deadline, May 15th. Today's the deadline for all of these 13F filings. And basically, there's lots of takeaways from these public filings. Takeaway number one, and I'm not going to go through all of them, just very interesting point. Lots of professional firms are now owning Bitcoin. So like you said, there's institutions that are buying these things. The number two largest RIA firm in the U.S., which manages $122 billion in assets, announced that they own $68 million in Bitcoin. The hedge fund that manages money for Yale and Princeton, their endowment fund managers, hold $434 million worth of Bitcoin. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. These are, you know, small numbers, right? I mean, that's a very, you know, $68 million out of $122 billion in assets is, you know, 0.05%. So it's a very small percentage point of where we're at. But there are now, you know, very large institutions that are putting their money where their mouth is and publicly declaring that and putting confidence behind that. And it's really incredible to see that, you know, that's viral, right? I mean, that's memetic in the traditional financial world where everybody talks, well, who's in it? You know, who's doing it, right? And you could start to point to different references. And now it's no longer a career risk to put, you know, a couple percentage points of client money into crypto. It's just, this bull run is completely different from the last bull run based on these ETFs. There's simply no other way to put it. Yeah. You have now like the marriage between traditional finance and crypto. It's the Bitcoin ETF. It's going to be incredible. So it already has been. Yeah. You know, we're expecting, you know, four times as many flows that we already have by the end of the year. Right? There's already been about $11 billion of inflows, and you know, we're expecting $50 billion, maybe $40 billion of inflows by the end of the year. So I think things are going to heat back up. Yeah.
Yeah, and all those positive, you know, talking about all these big firms that are now leveraging and using Bitcoin and buying Bitcoin, holding it. Something that was in the news this week was Vanguard. So Vanguard hired a new CEO. So there was a lot of controversy months ago when the Bitcoin ETFs were being offered. The Vanguard came out, remember, and said, you know, hey, we are not offering these on our platform, which was kind of,
it was
mind boggling at the time, right? Because you can go on and buy the miners, you can buy MicroStrategy. It seemed like a weird stance to take, and you know, we can't.
Bitcoin does that to people. It's controversial.
Yeah, so the CEO ended up, you know, getting relieved of his duties. We don't necessarily know what for. I don't think we can say that specifically just because of the Bitcoin ETF stance.
Yeah.
However, they are now bringing on a new... Yep, Brendan, go ahead.
It's just ironic. Again, can we prove it? No. But it's ironic that the Bitcoin ETFs come out, he is so sharply against it, then all of a sudden, poof, he's gone. Hey, guys, we don't know why, but he's no longer going to be working at Vanguard. And then, oh, what do you know? Coincidentally, a leader of BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF just walks into the office and replaces this guy. Again, we have no proof, but if one can read a little bit of writing on the wall,
post.
I would like to be I'd like to be a conspiracy theorist here. What is this one?
This is just saying who, you know, Salim Ramji. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right.
This is their new CEO, and he's just talking up the Bitcoin ETF, talking about congratulations to our whole team on making this innovation happen. Like, he's very clearly a supporter. He played a role in this. He was the you know, one of the executives that was in charge of launching the Bitcoin ETF.
That's his LinkedIn post. The new CEO 4 months ago was posting on his LinkedIn, congratulations on the BlackRock ETF. It was a pleasure working with Coinbase and the NASDAQ, etc. And now Vanguard CEO's out. He's in as the CEO of Vanguard now. So, I mean, that's... You got to follow the breadcrumbs. That's what I think the exercise is of conviction and, you know, whatever you believe in. But that's what we do here every week is... We at least will give you the charts. You know, Brendan does a great job every week of, you know, giving at least his opinion of what the charts are telling you, both good and bad. But we just try and find these breadcrumbs. And there was a lot out there over the last month that, you know, hopefully could help your conviction towards, you know, what this asset truly is over the next, you know, year, 5 years, decade. And, you know, it's easy to say when, if we hit all time highs next week, be like, oh man, should have looked back at all these breadcrumbs that were there. But that's what we try to do, to bring you what you won't find, around the internet every week.
Amen.
Yeah. I think it's just a great way of looking at it, of we could be at all time highs next week. And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to look back and be like, man, I shouldn't have just, I was trying to be a stickler. We have a saying over here, don't be a dick for a tick. And, you know, there's a lot of people in that boat saying, I was trying to wait for Bitcoin to go to 60 or 55,000 and I refused to buy it at 60,000. Now it's at 65 and I don't want to buy in because now it's too expensive, even though it's still down like double digits from the highs. And I think as we move forward, not only from like a retail perspective, is there going to be a lot of people being like, man, I wish I only bought Bitcoin at 60, 65,000. But I think also from like an institutional perspective, there is probably other people watching what has transpired at Vanguard. And I think they're taking notes of this because like it is unfortunate because if that did cost someone his job, like we never want to see that happen to anyone.
Oh, he's fine.
But I do think that other leaders in the world of finance and other aspects of the world, they're looking at what's happened here and saying, maybe I don't want to bet against this stuff anymore. It has quite the good track record every 4 years, and it keeps appreciating higher and it keeps getting adopted more globally and all this stuff's happening. So I think it will act as a little bit of a warning sign out there for all the people who are willing to take these heavily bearish positions on it. And again, yeah, maybe we see a little bit of up and down fluctuation. Maybe we try to play for a little bit of lower prices in the short term, but man, the long term reigns supreme.
So you're telling me JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon, he's the next to go down, or he's the final boss. Of bears to
capitulate. Maybe he's like,
who's gonna be the next CEO of JP Morgan that's a Bitcoiner?
When that happens, it's, you know, I'm curious who will go first.
Samson Mao for CEO of JP Morgan. Put him on the Bitcoin strategy.
Just make Michael Saylor's CEO of JP Morgan. Let's make him a dual CEO. But no, you know, I'm curious, you know, which one do we think is going to give first? Is it going to be Peter Schiff or is it going to be Jamie Dimon? Is it going
to
be
Peter Schiff is gotta catch on to the Bitcoin train. I mean, the shtick is up. I mean, he's got to hop back on the crypto train or not hop back on. But I mean, his son is doing it. He's got to realize that this is the future.
From seeing him in the mix so much recently, I like, besides his Bitcoin take, you got to appreciate the content strategy because he doesn't shy away from it. He leans into it 1,000% and does all these, he does all the podcasts. He does all the podcasts with the Bitcoin people, all the live streams. I'm like, this guy's just
he's probably made more money off crypto than freaking any of us.
Yeah, he's a promo junkie. Yeah, like he's got his own thing. I mean, it's like good for him. Like he's actually kind of smart. He really leans into it.
So if we had to choose someone between Warren Buffett, Peter Schiff, and Jamie Dimon, who is going to become a Bitcoiner first?
I think Jamie Dimon Satoshi. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I don't think Warren Buffett's going to come to Jesus anytime soon here. I think he's pretty much set in his ways.
I think he is coming to Jesus pretty soon. JK, love my guy,
Jamie
Warren
Dimon G. definitely feels like, you know, he's the protector in a sense of like the American financial system. Like, I feel like he thinks he's got the big sword in the ground, standing in front of it with a big Captain America shield and America sign on it. Like, he's like full on, like, good for him. Like, he's probably going to run for president one day. And, you know, he's running the most important financial institution in the world, which is JP Morgan Chase, right? Like, so at the end of the day, he always talks about like the American dollar and all things that are good for the American dollar and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, interest rates staying high and let's keep this America going and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think he's flipping the script anytime soon, and he's laughed at it publicly and all that kind of stuff. Although Onyx, which is a JP Morgan division, is really deeply ingrained in crypto, and they've got, I mean, JP Morgan has a very, very, very large crypto division, if you will. So there's kind of a weird dynamic there, or an irony, whatever. So maybe it'll subsume it from the inside. Then Peter Schiff, right? Like, I think like at some point he'll realize like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe it's good if I flip. Maybe it's like a big event and he could promote it. So I think he'll be the first one to flip.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think Peter Schiff could definitely be that person. I don't see Warren Buffett. I don't see Jamie Dimon, like you said. Same reasons. It has to be our boy Peter. And we've seen little like hints that he's warming up to the idea. Tivo, we've talked about it of like, hey, what he just said wasn't like super bearish on Bitcoin, at least in comparison to some of the stuff that he said previously. So maybe he's warming up. Maybe 100K is the mark. That is the day where Peter Schiff switches over. Maybe. That's my guess.
I like at least you got to respect him, because there's a lot of all the other talking heads on TV that once Bitcoin broke all-time highs, they had their little segments like, well, we've been in Bitcoin for over a year now at the bottom, and we'd like to report our profits of 100%. And it's like, yeah, but you're on TV like all the time, and you haven't talked about it once, and now you want to, you know, show that you got your little Bitcoin wallet. At least Peter's, you know, firm, but like, I don't have any of it. I don't want any of it. So you got to respect it.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. And we always like to end these things out with a lighthearted note. And we alluded to this earlier, but the man, the myth, the legend, Roaring Kitty has returned. Tivo, tell us what you know
Absolute
about this.
Absolute legend. The Roaring Kitty, some would say the meme stock leader of the infamous meme mania of 2021, where GameStop, you know, went absolute parabolic on a short squeeze off of Wall Street Bets, the Reddit, and became a movie. Dumb Money on Netflix, if you've ever seen it, is actually, it was really, really well made, really funny. But in looping it back into kind of what we do here, I wanted to talk it out. Number one, what do you think? You know, obviously, anytime anything like this happens where you have the news talking about some guy named Roaring Kitty leading a army of retail traders to attack, you know, a stock like GameStop to raise it is awesome. He had to, last time this happened, he had to go in front of Congress and testify. And I'll never forget, he did he logged in and he goes, his first statement was, I just would like to say I am not a cat. So the whole thing has comedy in it, but it is really involved into, you know, what we do here. And so, number one, what are your thoughts? Number two, if we had some time, I thought maybe it'd be cool to go look at the charts of crypto, whether it's total market cap or Bitcoin, kind of go back to January 19th, 2021 and see, you know, where were the crypto markets then? Because it does show a little bit, at least, of liquidity in the market for, you know, retail side or frenzy around, you know, memes or whatever. So I thought it'd be a cool little discussion to wrap it up today.
Definitely. I remember January of 2021. It was a great season. It was the peak of the bull market, you know, kind of frenzy. It topped out in May of 2021. January, obviously. Excuse me. Sparkling water. Shouldn't be drinking it while I'm podcasting, but there you go. A little surprise for everyone. but, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, this sort of mentality of the retail traders trying to screw the system, right? By buying up all the GameStop shares and, you know, short squeezing all of these naked short sellers, all these institutions. I think there's a big, you know, philosophical or like, you know, sociological reason why people are doing this. It's not just because they like GameStop or they think it's like this big profitable business, but they realize that there's so much short interest and there's an opportunity to squeeze these people and really make an impact. It's almost like a virtual Occupy Wall Street movement. You know, it's like they're doing it to make a statement. But I also think there's overlap with the Bitcoiners, right? I mean, you know, are you guys selling your cold storage Bitcoin ever? Like, you know, I'm planning on passing it down to the next generation, that kind of thing. And I think it's, you know, in a sense, not to like say it's basically like, you know, people trying to, you know, have an alternative system. And I think, you know, that's what GameStop, you know, short sellers or the people who are trying to squeeze the short sellers are trying to do. They're trying to just put a chink in the armor in a sense and show it for what it's worth. And Bitcoin's so cool because, you know, it kind of shows that the emperor has no clothes, the, you know, kind of the fiat currency and the debasement sort of inflation that goes on through there. And that, you know, Bitcoin's in a completely alternative system. And it's one that actually could take down, in a sense, the incumbent. And I think that these the GameStop frenzy people are the same way. They're never going to sell, right? They never want to sell until these Melvin Capitals of the world collapse. They're trying to make a statement. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting that it happened, that it's happening right now, and that the bull market correction is finishing up, and crypto starting to rally hard at the same time. So there are no coincidences, especially when you consider the stock market is trading strong, closing at new highs. I think it's going to be a good forward season here in the market.
Yeah, I mean, GameStop went from like $17 up to $65 just in the past few days from this whole debacle. And I mean, now it's back down to 33, but they halted it the other day. And it goes back to like an underlying principle of crypto. Like, the crypto markets don't get halted. Oh, retail's winning. Retail's right. Driving the market. It's crazy to me. And again, they always say it's all these different reasons, but it's just so wild that it's like, oh, retail's taking over the market and driving prices, gotta halt it. That to me just seems wrong. And that's not something that happens in the crypto market. Oh, retail's driving Bitcoin up 200%. Well, it's not getting halted. And that's one of the things that makes these crypto bull markets so great, is that these altcoins can go on a rip. I mean, if there's an altcoin going from And if there's an altcoin going from $17 to $65, everyone's going crazy. I mean, heck, that thing's probably going to 100. But, you know, if it happens in stocks, it's like things like this happen. And yeah, I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way. That's why we're in crypto. That's why we love crypto, is there's no circuit breakers. There's no halts. There's none of any of this stuff. I mean, if retail wants to drive the price, then they can. And it's a great time. So it's crazy. And the whole Wall Street Bets community, I wouldn't be surprised if more of them over time come increasingly more into the crypto markets, especially in the meme coin space. And I'm sure a lot of them have. And they're looking at the meme market and they just have a frenzy with it. I had a buddy texting me the other day. I mean, geez, I can't even say the name of the project on air, but he's like, yeah, we're taking leverage positions in this just wild, wild project. And they can get leverage on all this stuff now. And so I would never encourage that. I just want to be clear. But I just wanted to say that a lot of these Wall Street bet-like traders are kind of gradually coming over to the crypto markets because they just have more freedom. And maybe that isn't always a good thing for some of these people, but they do get it. So, well, gentlemen, I think that wraps us up for this market update. Man, what a time we had. So much to talk about. Definitely one of the longer episodes that we have gone through over here. But there's a lot happening in the markets, especially as we're heating back up over here. So if we come back and, you know, Bitcoin is breaking resistance next week, well, we're probably going to have another long episode because we want to make sure that everyone is informed on everything that's happening. Again, whether it's the fundamentals in the news or the technicals on the charts, we like to make sure that you're informed. So even if you do want to just skip around and maybe the technicals aren't for you, or maybe the fundamentals aren't for you, or maybe some of the politics and rates and CPI and inflation stuff isn't for you, well, we got timestamps for you in the section down below, so you can go ahead and check those out. But thank you all for watching. We're going to see all of you back at the same time, same place next week.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.